everyone. This is Noelle, and your co-host, Dame Dr. Foxy Brown, is with me.
Hey. This is, I guess, what will be official episode one of the Always Rational K-Pop Podcast. If you're here with us, you made it through the last show. Congratulations to you. We aim to be better this time. We have a little bit more news to talk about, and we're taking a fan-submitted topic, and we're also going to talk about something that I hope goes a little bit deeper. We'll see how this conversation plays out.
If you were with us on the pilot episode and you're still with us now, thank you very much. We appreciate your support. So, we will get the news out of the way first. This is pretty recent. Super Junior had Super Show 3 in Shanghai. Poor boy got hit somewhere on space with a light board. Ouch. After a day, the fan goes out and apologizes.
That's probably because the other girls found out who she was and they threatened to kill her.
But way to show your love. You do not treat your idols like that.
You don't throw things at them?
That's right.
You don't throw things at anybody. That's a pretty good rule to have in life. You try to avoid throwing things at people unless you hate them and you want them to die. Then throwing things is probably the least evil thing you could do.
Right. But of course, if you want to show your love to your idol, that's the worst thing you can do. Especially to an idol who is so vain and is so proud of the way he looks. And no, don't do that.
That's why I was kind of hoping that this person was like a rational fan or an act of God. Just to say, you know, you should probably try being a little bit less vain. We get that you were born pretty and you got a lot of things because of that advantage. But, you know, some people weren't. And they might be a little bit jealous.
But apparently, she didn't really mean to hurt him.
No, these unfortunate things happen. Hopefully everybody involved learns their lesson. That you shouldn't throw things.
It's bad.
You're not 3 years old.
And also, even if you mean good, sometimes it doesn't end up so good. You end up hurting people.
Yeah.
Okay? Don't do it. Bad kids, bad. That's number one. And then number two. JYJ's fan-made internet broadcast station closed down after 4 days. I want to be rational about this. I am rational. I'm not going to be emotional, but I feel bad for these boys. They cannot catch a break. Seriously. The admin was asking for special privileges like passes or backstage passes, and they ended up using materials like videos and photos without crediting the source. And also, the big no-no here is that they had an interview with a politician who wasn't really in anyone's good list. So it's like JYJ associating with the politician's name. Not in a direct way, but just because the politician had an interview. So, yeah, by association.
The other tragic part to this is that it's pretty well known that JYJ's basically gotten blacklisted from broadcasting.
Yes.
Because their former entertainment agency, SM Entertainment, has such a huge hold on the industry. They have a lot of financial backing. They have a lot of powerful allies. And it's sad because they're getting blacklisted here. And then AVEX is also doing their best to cock-block them. So
in Japan. So I feel bad for them. I mean, they can't go anywhere. And also, one more thing about JYJ. They can't perform anywhere because they're being cock-blocked by SM. The other big news is that the court ordered SM to stop blocking them, and every time they block JYJ, they're supposed to pay a specific amount of money. The hard part here is, how are they going to prove that SM is blocking JYJ, even if it's obvious?
That is a difficult thing to police. I think part of the reason the courts probably would have said something like that is to look like they're being proactive. Basically saying, you're not allowed to do this, and if you do it and we catch you, you're going to get fined. But the problem is, you can act through middlemen. You can act through other people. Someone may just decide, like, say JYJ was to appear on a radio show. They might just say, well, the DJ got sick that day, so, you know, you can't come in. Or someone else we were supposed to book earlier, they had to reschedule, and it turns out the only day they could do it was today. So, we will get back to you and your representation with when you can come on. And that's not really explicitly telling them they can't appear, but, and it wouldn't be able to be linked back to SM. But at the same time, that's probably the sort of thing that's happening.
Exactly. And in this case, their middlemen are the broadcast networks. the three major broadcast networks in South Korea, MBC, KBS, and SBS. So where are they going to go? Cable. But sad to say, JYJ was supposed to have a reality show on QTV. It suddenly got canceled for no apparent real reason. It's just really, really messy and sad.
It's kind of weird considering that they had a cable reality show ready to go and it got canceled. And it's not like you can reason out and say it got canceled because they looked at the stats and they thought they wouldn't be able to find an audience. They would definitely be able to find an audience. How long has it been since they filed to split up from SM?
2009, almost two years.
Yeah, it's going on 2 years. And the fans have been waiting that long to be able to see them on TV. So it's not like the huge rush of people wouldn't be there once they're able to appear on a program. But I guess everyone's kind of waiting for this whole thing to play out in its entirety before they go ahead and make a move and ally themselves with one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of SM, to change gears for a bit, news came out yesterday or the day before, depending on
where you are.
I should mention that for me right now, it is Thursday, the 10th of March. By the time you hear that, obviously, you'll be past that date. But SM announced that they have the rights to remake Hanakimi.
Yay! One of my favorite dramas.
If I remember correctly, Hanakimi is the story where the girl sees this high jumper.
That's right. He's an athlete. He's a high jumper.
And she's impressed by his style and I guess falls in love with him to some degree. So she decides she's going to go to his school, but his school is an all-boys school. So she disguises herself as a boy, gets into the school, and from the rest of it is just the hijinks, I guess.
Yeah.
With the pretty boy troubles and whatnot.
Yes. Think of it as Coffee Prince in a high school setting with all the pretty boys.
The one guy, love rival, that thinks he must be gay because he's falling in love with the main chick.
Or guy, however you look at it.
I've watched, I think I only watched 3 episodes of the Japanese drama, so I didn't get that far into it, but it was too over the top for me in terms of visual style, so I couldn't deal with it.
I watched both the Taiwanese version and the Japanese version. I like both, although it will be interesting. The main thing that we're looking out for with the announcement is the casting. Who are they going to cast as the girl turned guy?
It depends on what they want to do. Do they want to go with their established actress? I think Go Ara is still with SM. And
too pretty. How about...
And they don't care. What's the girl's name?
Amber! What are you thinking of? Think about Amber!
That would be perfect if she could act.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you have Yuna, who's in everything. They have a few actresses, of course, that... a few established spaces that they could go to, or they could go for a complete unknown. It depends. Hanakimi is a popular story. Yeah. And a lot like the adaptation of Boys Over Flowers, you know it's going to be cast with pretty boys. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be this automatic built-in audience of fans of idols and fans of the shoujo manga or the Taiwanese drama or the Japanese drama that are going to be watching to see how it goes. And of course, there's the question of what channel it's going to air on.
They haven't announced that yet. I mean, they just announced that they bought the rights, so you have to wait. And also, I want to know who plays the main guy.
Well, it's probably going to take a few months for them to decide on casting, so we'll revisit the story when that comes out.
Yes, when we hear from SM again.
Let's go ahead and talk about something happy from another company. Why don't you go ahead and talk about Big Bang?
Oh, yes. As expected, Big Bang went on to sell a gazillion records, and they even topped the iTunes chart, and they even made an appearance on the Billboard charts without any promotion in the U.S. They were in the Heat Seekers chart, and what's the other chart, D?
I don't know.
World chart, I think.
Okay, that makes
sense. I think.
But do you have a more realistic number than a gazillion?
No. Sorry, okay. Didn't take note. But for them to go into the Billboard charts without promotion...
They sold more than 10 albums.
Yep. No, let's up the ante a bit. They sold more than 1,000 albums. Since we're on about YG. Guess who made an appearance in Chris Brown's video?
Pac Teddy.
Yep. Oh, Teddy or Pac.
Also known as the leader of One Time. If you're too young to know who One Time is, do yourself a favor, look up their music. They're the precursor to Big Bang. And in some rights, a lot of people enjoyed their music way more than they did Big Bang's. But right now, Teddy is a producer for YG. He's made a lot of 21 songs, and he's done a lot of work with Big Bang as well. He's sort of responsible
for the sound.
Along with G-Dragon for the sound of Big Bang now.
So, Teddy, I'm not happy. I'm not happy with the music, but hey, you made good music with One Time, so I may forgive you.
On the one hand, it's him being in Chris Brown's video is a good thing because it gets his face out there. And if it's associated that he's a producer, that also bodes well for him and perhaps for YG as well. If since they are maybe supposed to be trying to get their artists into the American market. But at the same time, even though Chris Brown still, he stumbled for a while, he's regaining his popularity. But what you have to remember is this is a dude that everyone knew beat his girlfriend.
Yes.
So you have to consider the character of the person you're appearing with. I know a lot of artists in general have shady past, have dark past. It's kind of hard to say you shouldn't associate with this person, you shouldn't associate with that person. I mean, yeah, he beats women, but aside from that, he may be a pretty good dude. I don't know. But for some people, and for a lot of your fans probably, you know, that's a make or break kind of association. A lot of people will dislike you, especially if, you know, if it was just a cameo, this is a one-time thing, nobody might really care. But if it goes on to say you now have an established relationship with Chris Brown, you're now one of his producers or something like that, people might start to question, you know, is the money more important or is your character more important? What kind of people do you want to associate yourself with? What do your parents think when they see the friends you have? And that sort of thing. I mean, but Teddy is a grown man, so, you know, I can't tell him how to make his decisions. He's quite a bit older than I am, so.
Teddy, be careful. Think wisely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially stay away from drugs. Crown J can tell you.
I forgot about Crown J. Thank you for reminding me. So, Crown J is in the news again because apparently he assaulted his manager and ran away with money.
Wow. Hey, this has not been, the past 6 months has not been his time at all.
Poor guy.
Previously to this, he was accused of smoking marijuana. Apparently he picked up the habit in when he was staying in Atlanta. The article wasn't really clear on whether or not he was smoking it in Korea, but he seemed very upset on Twitter about being picked up by the police on suspicions of, I think it was both smoking the weed and sharing the weed with some of the people he met or he was associated with in Korea, so.
Okay. Someone snitched on him.
Yeah, definitely.
Because from what I could gather from the news, it didn't happen in Korea. It happened in the States. Korea has a strange way of booking people. If you did it anywhere else, it doesn't really matter as long as you're Korean. So that's really bad for Crown J.
I mean, when you consider it, it's not as though smoking weed or disseminating it is legal in the United States. So, you know, regardless, had he been caught, he'd be prosecuted depending on the amount he had on him. But again, he wasn't actually caught smoking anything. So, but, you know, we're not experts on Korean law, so
yeah,
we can't help you.
The thing here is that it happened in the past, okay? It happened in the past with no real evidence.
So who knows, like, Crown J isn't at the height of his popularity anymore because he took time off to attempt an American comeback. American debut, I'm sorry. I know he recorded a video with, God, what's his name? Someone from T.I.'s camp. I don't remember dude's name.
No,
Young something. I'm sorry. I listened to the song so many times I can't remember his name, but it was an English version of his last Korean single, I'm Good.
I'm Good, yep.
He was tweeting pictures of the set. I think he had this guy appear on his Crown TV, his internet show. But who knows what happened. Maybe his debut is at some point in the future, because it's not easy to break into the American market. Neither is it easy to break into the Japanese market. So we should probably take a tiny break, I guess, and then we'll be back to talk about crossover success between of Korean artists in Japan.
And we're back. While we were on break, we were talking about the crossovers from Korea to Japan, K-pop to J-pop. First things first, when you say the first successful crossover, who pops in your mind?
BoA.
Exactly. BoA was very young when she went to Japan. She debuted in Japan when she was 13?
14. Around 14 years old.
She started with SM when she was 11.
And keep in mind that in 2011, she would be turning 25 in American age. So it has been 10 years of her career in Japan and 11 years in Korea. So you have someone that's a strong veteran of the music industry, of both of them really, both the Korean music industry and the Japanese music industry. And you don't really have a lot of people that are able to say that. As of right now, someone that's a juggernaut, you only really have BoA and Dongbang Shinki.
Yes, and of course, my boys.
We know what has happened in the past few years with Dongbang Shinki. So you have BoA and you have two members of Dongbang Shinki. Let's go with that.
No, let's just say you have BoA and we just have Dongbang Shinki. Let's not make a distinction. But just to make it clear to the listeners, when we say Dongbang Shinki here, it's the original five, okay? Not the two. Because when they started in Japan, they were five.
Okay.
So we'll go with that. Anyway, BoA started really young in Japan and she paid her dues. She stayed in the country for a very long time. And sometimes I feel that she forgets that she's Korean because her style, her music is very J-pop and she's very good with the language.
Well, it has been, 10 years of performing, probably 12 years of knowing the language. So it's a lot of time to make yourself perfect. And if you're going to break into a country that you're not a citizen of, you don't speak the language as the people originally, you have different, although slightly similar cultures, it is important to be perfect at everything, because if you're the first, that means everything is against you.
And people back home would have a very high expectation of you.
SM had enough money. They established themselves as a company in South Korea. And of course, at the same time, their other artists were beginning to grow in popularity around Asia. I mean, I'd say the world yet, without doing heavy promotions in other countries. It's as the Hallyu wave was beginning to move. So BoA also was a huge proponent of that wave because she went to Japan and she was able to achieve a successful career. Her opening the door allowed another artist from her company, Dongbang Shinki, to go ahead and leave what was a burgeoning Korean music career and go to Japan, just being not the same type of artist as BoA. They still had to pay their own dues. You're the first major Korean boy band to debut in what is a field littered with boy bands. And again, you're not of the country. You're not an established artist in the country.
From what I can remember, Dongbang Shinki went to Japan in 2004 or 5. They debuted 2003, December 26, 2003.
Scary that you remember that.
It was at the BoA and Britney showcase.
It's kind of you debuting from square one. You have your nose to the grindstone, and the only way you're going to get popular is if you do exactly what these people tell you to do, and you pour all your energy into it, and again, you be perfect in everything. But of course now, in 2009, 2010, you already have BoA, who's a juggernaut in the music industry. You have Dongbang Shinki, who has the largest fan club in the entire world. And, following behind them, you have artists like Big Bang. We've mentioned in episode zero that they brought back their Japanese style to their Korean release, which we're not quite fans of because the two industries have completely different styles. Mm-hmm. And I guess that presents a form of schizophrenia for the audience, for the artists, I'm sorry, where they're performing one style of music that may not necessarily be them or be close to their ideal in Japan. And at the same time, they may also be doing something that's not their type of music in Korea, because Korea has a certain fan base that likes a certain type of song, and mm-hmm. Japan has a built-in fan base that likes a certain type of song, and your ideal may be somewhere in between the two of them. So you have to cater to each side, but at the same time forge your own musical identity, and that may, you know, at the end of the day, that may turn out to be a very difficult thing. But what happens mm-hmm. is these groups have such huge fan bases, these artists have, these three anyway, BoA, Dongmaishinki, and Big Bang have these huge fan bases, that it almost seems like they'll accept whatever they're given. So the music may still sell ridiculous amounts, but we probably won't be able to judge the true quality of the music for a few years. You know, when all is yeah. said and done, and you look back and it's like, what was better musically? Not what we liked better, not what spoke to us emotionally, but on the basics of musicality, which was better. So
yeah, and one way to gauge what's better is get someone to listen to their music, their Japanese music and their Korean music. Someone who has no idea who they are.
If you're an international fan who's listening to us, you probably have a lot of people that you can use in that situation. But I'm not sure to get into the whys, the Korean to Japanese transition.
First reason.
There is a very huge why, and that is money. Not just in population size, which is about 127 million or so, near 128 million for Japan, as opposed to around 50 million for South Korea. So automatically you have a huge population difference, but you also find that earlier on in the history of the Korean music industry, people were more inclined to buy physical albums. You had albums that came close to selling a million copies, but nowadays, with the advance of the speed of Korean internet and the piracy yeah. subculture, you have less and less physical albums being bought, and a lot more singles are being sold digitally, not necessarily full albums. And they've tried to compete with that by moving towards mini albums as opposed to full albums, because there's less of a risk yep. In terms of money. In 2010, Arashi, who's a Johnny's group, sold 1,053,064 copies of their album
Boku no Miteru Fuke.
The top-selling Korean album, on the other hand, was
in Korea, it's Super Junior.
Super Junior's Bonamana, which sold 200,193. So as you can see, there's about an 800,000 copy difference in the one album across countries. In the top 10 albums, really, for Korea of last year, only two artists, were not SM artists or former SM artists. On that list, the top 10, you have JYJ, SHINee, Sonia Shide, and Super Junior. And then you also have G-Dragon and Top and 21. So there is basically, in terms of physical album sales, in terms of purchasing power, you only have one company that's reaping the huge benefit. Mm-hmm. And of course, Shidi and Tops is a little special because their album hasn't been out all that long and they've still moved over 100,000 copies. So
amazing.
You can see that Big Bang, certain YG artists, they still have a lot of power in terms of moving sales. But would you rather sell 100,000 in your own country, or would you rather take the chance, pull your artists out of the spotlight for a few years, have them learn another language, have them work with famous Japanese composers, so that, you know, even if they're not top in the Oricon list, even if they're not making number one album sales, if they're making number 31, the number 31 on Oricon last year sold 207,702 albums, which is still more than the number one artist in South Korea last year. Now, of course, this is only physical. This is physical sales. So it's not taking yep. into account how much they sold digitally.
Yep. And also, they count the Chaka Uta releases separately, the ringtones.
Okay.
And yeah, they have a separate chart for that. it's a bit different than the physical albums. So obviously, first things first, the Korean entertainment companies tend to see Japan as the greener pasture.
Right.
I mean, I don't blame them because the Korean music market is shrinking and the population is smaller compared to Japan. And also, the albums cost more in Japan. It's
Yes.
very, very expensive. Oh my
A
gosh,
lot of
so
their
expensive.
physical media is a lot more expensive.
And they don't really have a problem with piracy, illegal downloads, as much as the Korean music industry does. They have a different problem. It's album rentals, but it's not as big a problem as piracy and illegal downloads in Korea. So piracy is taking up a huge chunk of the pie in terms of music sales.
And you know that's tragic. There are avenues for you to get your music on the cheap, really. There are things like Soribada and Monki and all these online retailers that you can get digital singles for about 8 cents a song, which is
That
really
is so cheap.
it is really cheap for the consumer. It's keeping the artist in poverty, but if you're in it for cheap music, there are ways to get it legally. There's no excuse of, music is too expensive. But what I think is also the problem is some of these companies getting greedy. You barely have established your foothold in Korea and you're already jumping to Japan. And then as you have I don't really want to speak ill of Cube because I feel like Cube has been doing a lot of things right.
You like Cube. Let's get this straight, okay?
Within the market, I feel like Cube has done a lot of things right. And of course, they make music that seems to appeal directly to me. So I am going to be a little bit biased when it comes to them. But I feel like your artist debuted in 2009. I think 4Minute at this point has at least two official Japanese releases. And Beast is getting ready to make their own. And they debuted late 2009. And 4Minute debuted mid 2009. So you have two groups that haven't even reached their 2 year anniversary yet. And they're jumping to Japan. I think it's fine if you've already built in a Japanese audience to go ahead, do a concert, do some things to appeal directly to your fans. But to go ahead and attempt at a Japanese career, which keep in mind, it doesn't have to be a success. You could end up going there and wasting money. But hey, I guess their advisors told them their two biggest artists make sense. Send them over. You can't send over the weaker ones.
This is the thing. Everyone is going to Japan, and when I say everyone, name
Everyone.
it.
I don't think
Everyone.
I can name all of them, but
Okay, 2 p.m. Okay, let's start. 2 p.m. They're going to Japan.
they debuted in 2008.
This year, they're going all out because they're going to have first time ever a Japanese single. I'll discuss this a bit later. One of my pet peeves.
They're getting a
And then
theme song. They're getting a
there's.
theme song for anime for the spring season, I think. I think 4Minute had one as well.
I got the single. Why?
Kara has their own special problem that we don't really have the time to get into right now. But Kara was unique in that they got their own Japanese drama, basically.
Kara is big in Japan, and I don't really know why. And I can safely say this, they're bigger than Girls' Generation in Japan.
I think Kara had the perfect strike when the iron's hot kind of thing. Mister catapulted them into stardom in Korea, and instead of even mess with a good thing, DSP immediately sort of made moves towards Japan, and they had this advantage of having what no one can deny is an amazing song, the perfect choreography for it.
Yeah, the butt dance.
Sonia Shide, I think, would have been more popular had they struck when G was at the height of its popularity. Because what you have is they released G, they released Genie, and everyone kind of moved on from those songs, and then they redid them in Japanese. And it's like the moment has passed. Like 4Minute basically did the same thing.
And it's not fair to these artists. I mean, they have a good thing going for them in Korea, okay? And then all of a sudden, their company decides to take a risk and send them to Japan, where everything is new. They have to learn everything, the language, the culture, even though the culture is close to what they're used to what they've grown up with. It's still different. It's still a lot of pressure on the artist.
And then there's the backlash you get Korea sometimes for for doing essentially what you need to do in the Japanese market. I think Dongwoon of Beast, his father spoke out recently on something where Beast was asked to be photographed in kimonos, and Beast turned it down because they were thinking of how the Korean people would feel about it. But what he said that would really makes me and other people think that he's one of the most sensible parents of an idol there is. He said, you know, you have to think about it from the Japanese perspective as well. For you to turn down wearing traditional Japanese clothing for a photo shoot, that is insulting to them, even if you're saying, you know, it's based on the grounds of my culture and how my people would feel about it. There's also, you know, the other side of the coin, and I think it may have been Jaejoong, I'm not sure, but someone got a scandal kicked up because they pronounced kimchi the way the Japanese people pronounce
Oh,
it.
yep,
So,
it's Jaejoong.
okay.
His photo shoot, his add-on photo shoot.
So at the same time, you have you're all out in this market in the case of what Dongbangshinki was, and being all out in this market, you need to do what the other people do. And yeah, they have the advantage of being Japanese, so if they pronounce kimchi that way, it's not a big deal for them. But for you, because there's this negative history between the two countries, and there's this, both countries have the culture of the strong pride in their country and in their national identity. So you have this issue of who you're going to conform to. And then you can't really afford to alienate your Korean audience too much, because at the end of the day, if the Japanese public decides they don't listen to you anymore, the only place you can go back to for your career is Korea.
It's basically when in Rome, do as the Romans do. You're there. You're there to embrace their culture. You're there to sell something to them. So the sensible thing to do is to accept whatever their culture dictates. Go with the flow. I mean, if you refuse it and if you don't want to do it, what are you doing there in the first place? That's what I think.
I mean, of course, you have to draw the line somewhere. If it's something that's outrightly mocking your own culture,
Exactly. But you have to use common sense in that.
you still have to keep in mind that as long as you're in Japan and you're a Korean citizen, you're ambassador of Korea.
Okay, I'm gonna go to my pet peeve. Because they didn't spend a lot of time preparing for their Japanese debut, what they usually do is they recycle their songs. I don't like that. Why would I pay for something that I've already bought? It's the same song, it's just different lyrics. I want something new, something different, of course. But we have to understand, though, that it is due to time constraints, the easiest way for them to debut in Japan is to recycle their own songs in Japanese. And also, there is a huge demand for the artists to debut in Japan. So, in a way, the Korean market is just reacting by sending their idols to Japan
Yeah,
in
because
haste.
the idea is to keep Hallyu alive. So
But I wonder how it is on the flip side. How do the Japanese feel about these Korean artists debuting in Japan, one after the other? How do you think they feel?
I mean, on the one hand, they have the second largest music industry in the world. So really, they have the most space for it. But on the other hand, they may feel like any other country would feel if you have a lot of foreign-born people in a particular industry coming in and inundating. They might feel like there are Japanese artists that are performing the same type of music that do it well that aren't getting an audience for their music. There is probably some resentment there's some
Probably.
of the resentment is probably tied just a little bit to racism, maybe more depending on the person. Just to talk a tiny, tiny amount to wrap this up. About the difference in scandals between the two countries and their paparazzi, basically.
Right, scandals. Should we start with the biggest one that we have this week?
Go ahead.
I know many of you watched Boys Over Flowers and are aware that one of the actresses in the drama killed herself about, was it 2 years
I
ago as
think it's
well?
about 2 years ago, yeah.
2009. I'm sorry if I butcher her name. It's Jang Jayeon.
Yeah.
And she killed herself because apparently she was being used by her entertainment company. Basically, she was being whored out by her company.
How you got a lot of animals on your end. But basically, the idea behind it is that she was a struggling actress. She had not had major roles, and what's tragic is her role in Boys Over Flowers, the role before her death, was her breakout role
In a movie.
in a TV show.
But she had a movie as well,
Oh,
White Elephant.
okay.
Yeah.
Was she the star?
I can't remember. She, I don't know.
If
I really don't
you
know.
can't remember the answers, probably no. But she's making a name for herself on what was this big idol drama, and shortly after the show was over, really, she killed herself, and it caught a lot of people by surprise because a lot of people tend to think that if you're famous, if you have money, that you can't possibly have anything wrong in your life. And then after she died, and the news of her suicide notes and testaments of her friends, and I think either a manager or ex-manager, just said, she was dealing with all these really heavy things, and she felt like there was no way she would receive justice, unless she was like this example, unless she was this person that killed herself because no one would listen. And really, what's been released is a list of names. I think it's 31 names
31 names, and they're all powerful people, very big in the industry.
that her company essentially sold her to in exchange for roles, prominence, money, probably. She said she was forced to sleep with 31 devils over 100 times. And again, these are allegations. There's portions of the list that's been translated, that's been circled around. I think the honorable thing to do would be to refuse to mention any of these names, because you don't know if the people on it are innocent or guilty. And her case is so difficult because she's been dead for 2 years, so there's no longer a living witness. And on the one hand, her death is the great tragedy that would make people want to prosecute this. But on the other hand, it's now made the case difficult because there's no complaining witness left.
Yeah, he can't really prove it. I mean, she's dead, no one can talk. And also, just yesterday, the news just said that the list may have been fabricated, the evidence may have been fake. That destroyed me, seriously.
On the one hand, it is entirely possible that the list could be fake. But if you've seen some of the names on this list, it's also possible to say, well, said, you need to make this disappear because I can't be associated with this. So I think justice won't come to her if all of her allegations are true, of course. And I think she was a person that was orphaned, that had no family, that had no one she could have as a support system. So what you have is a tragic case of someone who literally felt like they had no one they could go to. And she'd supposedly exchanged these letters with a friend who I think was in jail at the time.
It's ironic though. The friend who was in jail at that time was in jail for rape.
So yeah, the story, it can really go either way. The emotional thing to do, of course, is to side with her, to believe in her. But we And really, she needs corroboration. It's very possible that there are many other struggling actresses in this type of industry, with the sordid way things are handled and swept under the rug. There's a lot of people that probably have gone through the same thing, men and women alike. But because they're still in the industry, and they're afraid probably of how their parents will look at them, how their friends will look at them, and it's unfortunate that people will continue to suffer basically until they have the power to make it stop. And it's sad that they don't realize that speaking up is the power in itself. That if you're able to say anything, now not everyone, of course, has the strength to talk. And her strength to talk was only left behind in her death, really. And basically, I've been a fan of K-pop for, this will be, I think, 6 years, 7 years. And there have been a lot of people every year that are famous that kill themselves. And this industry has really taught me that you can't think that anybody is too powerful, too rich, too pretty, too famous, too anything to be that depressed and kill themselves. I think Tablo spoke out about the way depression is viewed in the country. Tablo of Epikai, of course, where it's really looked down upon to seek mental help. And really, that's the most important thing you could do if you're depressed. For you, for your family, if you have children, for them, the most important thing you could do is seek help, because health isn't just your body. Health is your mind as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it may be difficult for these people to talk about mental health issues just because it's the culture.
Right.
Because they think that once you're seeing a shrink, psychiatrist or a psychologist, they think you're crazy. And in general, it's a cultural thing. It's not just in Korea, it's all over the world. But unfortunately, in Asian countries, it really is a big deal.
I can vouch for it. I do live in a Western country. It's a small Caribbean country. But here, it's probably because there's the idea of everybody knows everybody, or at least the family you come from. It's a black mark on your family to have someone be known for seeing a psychiatrist or be known for having mental problems, mental episodes that's not linked to, say, something like drugs, even though taking drugs is also a very horrible thing to put your family through. But I have had several family members on both sides of my family that have not sought the help that they need. And it's tragic to see the way it tears families apart, the way kids don't see their parents because of things like that. And really seeing the way it works here, it's not hard for me to see why people in the spotlight especially would not want to go ahead and see a psychiatrist. But it's going to take a while before it's seen as, you know, something positive, that you're being a responsible adult, really, and you're taking, for lack of a better word, you're taking responsibility for your life and the direction it's going in, and you're putting a stop to this before it spirals too far out of control.
In my case, someone close to me had mental episodes, but it was because of drugs, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But normally people would be so ashamed to seek help, but not in my family. It's because the person had to do it for the kids. It's difficult because on one hand, you're doing it for the people who care about you, for your family and for yourself. But on the other hand, the people around you who aren't exactly related to you, they tend to talk. And then when they tend to talk, they ostracize. If you're the one being ostracized, that's difficult.
It's extremely hard to face anything alone.
Mm-hmm.
You already have a mental health problem, whatever that might be. And that's already difficult enough to deal with when people are supporting you. When you feel like everyone else put you on the outside because they're saying you're crazy. And let's keep in mind, crazy is a very harsh term for what is hundreds of different mental disorders. So it's completely unfair to class someone as crazy without really knowing what their problem is.
So I guess the best thing for you to do is, if you know someone who's going through a mental episode, is to be supportive. Don't shun them. Be their friend. Get them help.
I hate to put an end on this conversation, but we do have one last thing to talk about. It's sort of a hypothetical free talk of what would you do to be famous? Because Jang Jae-yeon, really, she had to essentially put up with being treated like a prostitute just for the ability to achieve her dream. And the idea is that if you're not lucky enough to get into a big company that doesn't have to resort to these sort of things to put your face out there, that can essentially, like SM did, that can buy the rights to what is probably an extremely expensive property so that they can put a lot of their artists forward in the show. So if you have the opportunity, say your lifelong dream was to be a singer or an actor or a model, even something that really relies on your face, or even in a lot of other jobs, you come across people that will say, well, you know what you have to do. To what extent would you be motivated to do it just based on hard work, just based on your own effort? And to what extent would you be willing to do certain favors in exchange for, you know, the ability to get pushed forward?
Okay. I'll answer that first. What would I do to become famous? Hypothetically, let's say I wanted to be a singer or an actress. I'll be honest and say I'd be willing to undergo plastic surgery. If I have to do it, fine. No one's going to know anyway, right? But what I'm going to do first is to burn all my pictures, like the past pictures, and make sure that no one has posted any pictures of me that may incriminate me in the future. First, do that.
Okay.
And then I suppose I would spend money on acting classes and singing classes. And just go to a lot of auditions, work hard. If it doesn't work out, I guess I'm not cut out for it, or I'm just not lucky. But I draw the line in selling my body, I suppose. I can say that now because I haven't been in that situation. I haven't been desperate enough to do anything.
So if your manager, who let's pretend he's been very above board and very honest in his attempts to promote you. If your manager, this is the first time he's ever come to you with anything shady, he said, "Okay, look, what I have is something that is a guaranteed hit TV show, and I could get you on it." But after the producer saw a picture of you, he said, "Look, I could put your actress on this show, but the only way she's getting on is if you have her meet me in a hotel room at this time." In that situation, what would you say? This is like your make or break job. If you pass this up, chances are there won't be anything else.
It's tough, right? Because honestly, like I've said earlier, I haven't been that desperate for anything. So I can be idealistic here and say, no, pack up and leave. I mean, there are other places. I know there are other places that wouldn't do that, the bigger agencies. And you can always say no. It's a choice. You always have a choice. You're not stuck.
I agree. There is always at least the illusion of a choice. There's always, you can always say, if I leave with my integrity and this is something that I was meant to do, I'm not going to be robbed of it because I refuse to do something to lower myself.
That's
But
right.
at the same time, I think, just to parallel it back to K-pop, I think a lot of these people, all they have is the illusion of a choice. Really, at the
That's
end
right.
of the day, they have to do it. And
And that's the sad part,
the set,
right?
what makes it worse is not saying this happened to someone like Jo Kwon, but you gotta consider this guy was a trainee for 8 years.
Very long time, yes.
And I think he was 20 when they debuted, but you gotta look at it. Most of your childhood is gone. This is the only thing you know how to do, right? All you know how to do is sing, or all you know how to do is act. And at least at 20, you have the ability to go to college. You can learn a trade. You can do something. But when you consider a person who's been essentially dreaming of this for 11 years, now they're mid-20s, they're early 30s, it's kind of, as a woman in certain cultures, you have to do this now or you have to get married and have kids. That's like your only option. So a lot of people feel, when placed in that situation, I have to do it because I've been grinding for 11 years and no doors have opened to me through hard work. If I could get this door open through lowering myself, and after that, my face will be out there because of my hard work in this show, because everyone says that I stole whatever scene I was in, that kind of thing. I think people approach it with that mindset that, yeah, this thing might be bad that I have to do. Or that I choose to do, rather. This thing might be bad.
This is what happens after that. Would you be able to live with your decision? You have to think about
It
that.
all boils down to if you're the kind of person that can put that away. Like, I think a lot of people would be happier about it if the people that they had to lie with were attractive or were young or were someone that, were it not in this situation where you're trying to sleep your way into a job, were a person that, they would be interested in, then I think a lot of people would find that a lot easier to live with. But what you find is that a lot of these people are old. A lot of these people are lechers. I mean, it's someone that could be your grandfather. It's horrifying on more than one level because this person is in a position of authority and power over you, and then you have your manager, your direct boss, who's pushing you to do it. So, especially if the person is a minor, it's a lot harder for them to say no.
That's true. But bear in mind that this doesn't only happen in K-pop. It happens
In
everywhere.
every entertainment industry in the world, this happens.
That's right. As long as there's an entertainment industry, there are going to be lechers who abuse their position and their power to have their way with you and to get what they want. And they dangle fame in your face and say, you have to do this.
This producer may be a hit maker, and the only way for a nobody like you to be able to afford him, because he may be someone in a position like Pharrell, who Pharrell of the Neptunes, who could command millions of dollars a beat. Mm-hmm. So really, what do you have to offer him? Do you have the millions of dollars? Probably not. Is your company mm-hmm. willing to spend the millions of dollars? Probably not. I'm not saying this exactly. is what Pharrell does, but someone in his position may say, I might take a lot less money than I normally would, A, because I like your voice, and B, because I like your body. Now, you can use your voice in the booth, but I'm going to need you to use your body at another time. So it's a guaranteed hit song.
I think the best analogy here is selling your soul to the devil. I'm not saying that go ahead, sell your soul to the devil, but I suppose if you're really desperate enough and if you really want something so bad, you would do anything to get what you want, but be prepared for the repercussions after.
I think every...
You have to be able to deal with what happens after.
You don't always hear about these people, but there are a lot of trainees who just, after waiting and waiting, they just leave. And you don't really hear why they leave or mm-hmm. or know what they've been going through at the time, but it could easily be something like this. They could have been doing it all along and just not seen... On the one hand, they could have not seen any benefit from it. You know, you're being whored out to these people and nothing's happening for you. You can't continue to put yourself through that for nothing. And like they say, in life, nothing is free.
There's no free lunch.
You have to be willing to give and take to do things. But just to put myself on the end of that question, in terms of what I've been willing to do, like you, I've never really wanted anything that badly. To say, lay my principles aside and just do this for the benefit of what could be to come. I've never been in a situation like that. I've never really been so uncomfortable with my lot in life that I desperately want to be famous. And really, there are very few people that luck their way into fame. Most people are the ones that have wanted it so desperately that they've been willing to do anything. And a lot of the time, it's been legal things. Sometimes you just have to work with someone long enough and they'll tell you, okay, you've been here 8-9 years. You've always said you wanted to rap. Let me hear you do something. And that might be mm-hmm. the start of your career. And all you had to do was lug boxes around for 8 years. But in other situations, it may be, you know, you had to do some things. You'd be ashamed of your parents knowing you did. 20 years later, at the end of the day, it was worth it. Even if those are parts of your memoirs, you're going to skip over writing.
You can pretend it didn't happen, right?
Right. I mean, you talk to your shrink, you've dealt with it. There's no reason for everyone else to know. But in this situation, I think it would be best if more people were willing to come forward and let everyone know. And I think, tragically, we're a few years and a few more suicides away from something like that really coming to the light. And not in the form of just one person making complaints, but possibly tens or hundreds of people. There was a survey probably a year and a half ago that talks about how many actresses are hit on and touched inappropriately, how many actors as well are forced to take drinks they don't want to have, all in the name of business deals and fame. So
it's a shocking number. I remember that, but I don't have the exact number. We'll probably go back to that in a future episode once I get the actual figures. But it's more than 20%.
Okay, so I think it was actually somewhere nearer to 60% or higher. But let's just, as we wrap up, let's get away from this topic. What group would you want to talk about in the future?
In the future, I would want to talk about, I suppose, we can do a few people a favor by talking about M Black.
Okay.
It's going to be difficult for me because I don't know them. I'm not really familiar with their music, and I'm not really familiar with the members except Thunder.
Except, you know, and you know that Lee Joon can get it.
Yes. You know, I have to admit this right now. As you guys will probably realize by the time we're in our third episode that I'm a very shallow person.
Incredibly shallow. She doesn't even care if the person can sing. It doesn't matter as long as they're attractive. is sad. And I'm pretty much the opposite of that. It doesn't really matter to me what the person looks like as long as they can sing. So you'll find that our opinions on artists may differ just based on aesthetic reasons.
Yes.
So,
but okay, even if that's the case, though, I know how to appreciate talent. I may not be a fan of this person, but I know this person is talented. But that doesn't mean I'm going to take time out to buy their album. It's just because I'm busy supporting
pretty people.
Pretty people. And don't hate me for that. I mean, it's a matter of preference. And I am the first to admit that sometimes the people I support aren't that talented, but they make me happy. They entertain me. I'm here to be entertained. Right?
But just to say, just as a little counterpoint before we wrap up, you don't have to look at them when you listen to them sing.
Not exactly, no. But hey, I have to look at them when I watch their videos.
You don't have to watch
when I watch
you don't have to watch the videos to support them. If you buy their album, that's purely an audio based thing. If you listen, you're enjoying their voice, not their face.
This is the sad part, okay? I know.
Yeah,
I know you mean.
You know I'm right, but
I know you're right, but I have to defend myself. Okay? I am trying to be rational here. But as a supporter of obviously good-looking groups and good-looking people, it's unfair for the talented ones, but who aren't really blessed in terms of looks, to suffer the same fate from people like me. It's sad because before I support a group, I have to see how they look like first.
That's terrible. I do it the other way. I actually prefer to avoid seeing what they look like for as long as possible, just for their music to be presented to me unbiased. Mm-hmm. Because if I were to be entirely fair, yes, I do prefer pretty people to ugly people. I think everyone does in general. But
and hey, excuse me, Dee. I remember you said I don't associate with ugly people, so you're lucky to have me as a friend. So, yeah.
Are you trying to say wait, did I say that or did you say that?
No, you said that. Where's the log?
Anyway, before she accuses me of being an ugly hater, let me go ahead and close off before this conversation gets any worse.
Wait, I'll make an exception though. I'll be very honest. The only exception that I did when it comes to aesthetics was Big Bang. I was a fan of their music before I was actually a fan of their personalities, and I didn't even know how they looked like until about 2 years into their debut.
See, you bringing that up is going to get me into trouble, because now I'm going to want to extend this line of conversation. Big Bang, pre-debut, when they released pictures, the first set of official pictures, a lot of people commented that they were ugly, except
apparently so.
Except for Top, I think, and G-Dragon. They were the only ones they said weren't ugly. But they're actually, even at that time, before the makeup, before the styling, before the hours of work that likely went into covering up acne and all that stuff for teenage boys. But the truth of the matter is none of them were unattractive. Regardless of who you like from who you don't like, none of them were unattractive. They were atypical for boy bands in terms of looks. And then, of course, because of their success, now people are slightly more likely to pick up people that aren't traditionally handsome. Then what you have to consider is these are teenagers. They're going to grow into their looks. So you picking them up at this early age, someone may be handsome now, and 3-4 years down the road, not so much. So really, in that situation, you have to look at either their talent or how well they fit into the group. And unfortunately, we're going to touch on this some more when we talk about M Black, and that's not being mean, but some people may fit into a group, but not necessarily be talented. Okay?
Yep. Okay. Remember that, people. And we're not going to be mean. This is just us being rational and being honest.
So save the hate mail if you're not going to save it and you're going to send it to us anyway. The address is therationalkpoppodcast@gmail.com. And while you're on the internet, you can find us on our official website at alwaysrationalkpoppodcast.wordpress.com, or you can find us at twitter.com/arkpoppodcast.
If you were trying to reach our Twitter page a few days ago, we're so sorry. we got suspended for some reason. But now the page is up and running, so you can tweet us. Tweet us all you want. And follow us, okay? Follow us. Tell us what you want to hear.
And we will make every effort to discuss it. It has been nice talking to you, Noelle.
As always, Foxy Brown.
And the rest of the audience. As your friends, we hope to meet you again next week.
This is a regular thing, and I hope you enjoyed our little podcast. And stick around. You're in for a lot of good times, okay? All right, everyone, have a good day, night, wherever you are.
Listen to my heart. 시간 울어봐 가지마 널 씹어서 뱉어준다.